Blog Talk Radio.
3, 2, 1. On the first Monday of August 2007, a new internet-circulated series premiered, focused on the current and far-reaching television environment. On this first Monday of August 2022, that environment has expanded and innovated, and this program remains a spotlight on it. We'll celebrate 15 years in the spotlight with a pair of internet radio exclusives. Lifetime Executive Vice President, Head of Programming, Amy Winter, this hour, and Topic General Manager, Ryan Schnatry, next hour. Also ahead, new September shows at Disney+, Showtime finalizes Vampire Saga, and our classic trivia question. Hello, everyone. I'm Simon Applebaum, simulcasting live from New York on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, and present on the iHeartRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Verbal, Reason, and Acast. This just in, 15 years and still going strong, and tomorrow will be televised. It is wonderful to have you with us for this special anniversary edition of the Pro About TV's current and future. 73 degrees at the top of the hour here in the Big Apple. This is where we've originated this program all along. We are delighted to have you with us. We have a very special 2 hours ahead. A great guest for you each hour, and we invite you to be as much a part of the program as yours truly is. How do you do that? You pick up the phone, you dial in, and you use this number, 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you're catching us across the country or around the globe here on Blog Talk Radio, Speaker, TuneIn Radio. The other way you get involved is our chat room and our very good friend Rick Webb from Philadelphia. He's already in the room, and we invite you to be there too as well. It's SimonApple04 by name, and you will find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. And because we want to give you as much time as possible to interact with our guests, we will only have one promotional break each hour, and that will be at the bottom of each hour. Lifetime Head of Programming and Executive Vice President Amy Winter joins me live from Charlotte, North Carolina, after a feature that we do usually at the top of every program, and we do it again today, News Notes. For September 2022, for viewers to remember, Disney Plus will debut at least two new franchise-inspired series. Andor, a prequel to the Star Wars Rogue One movie, comes on September 21st, with Diego Luna back as Cassian Andor. Luna also serves as an executive producer for this 12-episode adventure. 2 weeks earlier, the popular Pixar-made animated feature Cars becomes an on-the-road series featuring characters Lightning McQueen and Mater. Owen Wilson and Larry the Cable Guy will head the voice cast. A vampire-driven drama series, long in the making, finally arrives on Showtime October 9th. Let the Right One In is a father-daughter-daughter being the vampire relationship saga, played respectively by the Oscar nominee of A Better Life, Damien Bashir, and Madison Taylor Diaz, you may remember from Netflix's Selena, the series. Separately, the Pay Network will pilot Mason, an autobiographical satire from the makers of hit independent film Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. We will have News Note quickies for you at the top of the next hour. And now joining me live from Charlotte, North Carolina, the Executive Vice President and Head of Programming at Lifetime Television, Amy Winter. Amy, welcome.
Thank you. I love being here.
And we love having you here. And thank you again for kicking things off in this anniversary special. Amy, when we started 15 years ago, this very week of August, Lifetime was very big on scripted series, very big on unscripted series, and made-for-TV movies, good as they were not only the exception rather than the rule. Flip it now, and now made-for-TV movies, especially made-for-TV movies that are now being written, produced, and directed by women, have become the norm with unscripted series out there. How and why did this involvement happen?
Well, first, I just want to say congratulations on 15 years. It's really remarkable, and I hope you celebrate tonight. But, yes, it has been a bit of a shift over the years. What we really found with our audience was they really, these stories that we're able to give them in 2 hour increments really resonate. They're very entertaining. They give them a roller coaster ride, and they've built up the habit. You know, we have two new movies every weekend. It's something that the audience has grown to count on, and so it was a gradual shift over into that that type of programming.
Mm-hmm. Is there a science, Amy, toward how you create made-for-TV movies? Like, what genres do you create? When you schedule them, who gets involved with them? And now, even more importantly, the women that you have writing, producing, and directing them.
There is a science to it. I mean, it's not to say that we don't fall in love with some outliers out there and, you know, the occasional movie that doesn't necessarily go with the rest. But I think for our viewers, they really, we always talk about them as women who have had a long day, who have spent a ton of time with their family and or at work and are ready to pour a glass of wine and enjoy some really wild stories. So, you know, for us, we just feel like, you know, we always talk about the roller coaster. There has to be a roller coaster of emotions involved in our storytelling. And that is the very, very base of where we start. From there, I think we layer on the different genres that we know that our audience enjoys. We do, I believe, the best biopics in the business, some very, very well-known artists that people might know, and others, you know, huge factions of culture and audience might know, but other people might not be so aware of them. So we like to bring those stories to light too. The other brand defining ones we do are incredible, ripped from the headlines, true stories. These are crime stories that really just captivate our viewers. And quite honestly, I feel like our audience does a really great job of picking them out for us, because we often see people commenting on stories out there in the news where they're like, this sounds like a Lifetime movie. So we know that they get our filter for sure.
I'll get back to the rip to the headlines movies in a moment, but on the bios, because you've done them quite a while. I remember way back when one of the most acclaimed movies you've done in Lifetime's history starred Thora Birch as someone who was coming from the slum side of the tracks and got a scholarship, I believe, either a high school or a college scholarship. So you've had a lot of experience with bio films. What makes a good bio movie?
Well, you know, on you want somebody who has resilience, who has lived life to the fullest to a certain extent, you know, that basically either had some sort of challenge that they've overcome or some rise to prominence that we find truly interesting. So, you know, our team gets together routinely and says, who do we really think our audience would like to know more about? Or even if you think that you know about them, is there something outside of the scope of what is public that we can really dig into and bring to our audiences? But you are correct. I mean, the biopic features on Lifetime definitely predate me. We're just trying to continue the great legacy that has been our annual event moment.
Mm-hmm. And two of your most recent biopics have been award winners one way or another, or award getters, or nomination getters. I'm referring to The Clark Sisters, which for a lot of people was a revelation of a movie. And then there was last year's Mahalia, which was nominated for an Emmy Award for the woman who played Mahalia Jackson, the great gospel singer.
Exactly. Those are perfect examples of, you know, I had an awareness of Mahalia Jackson, not so much the Clark Sisters, so that was really just a great adventure for me. But these are people who are beloved by, you know, the gospel music fans and followers. And there was so much to learn about their backstory and their history. What's so interesting about when scripts like that come in, though, is you really want to balance it for the people who are coming because they are Mahalia Jackson fans and they want to make sure that that story is told accurately and get a sneak peek into the private life of what her life must have been like. But you also want them to feel like we are telling the public life accurately and giving these wonderful, amazing artists their due moment in the sun. And so those are just two great projects that really their audiences came and a whole new, including my kids, you know, a whole new audience learned more about them.
Mm-hmm. Going back to the rip from the headlines format, let's use that roller coaster and the wild motif that you used earlier in our conversation here. How does the roller coaster work in a rip from the headlines thing? Do you adopt the Dick Wolf formula, for example, that he does so well with all of his broadcast network shows, or do you go a different route? And when it comes to wild, how wild is wild?
Yeah. Well, it starts with how wild the actual true story is. And I think that we have a range that we work within. You know, some of them are we do inspired by movies that are sort of the Dick Wolf model. But then we have some in our actual, you know, based on the true story where we get the life rights and we work with the people who are at the center of those stories. So for us, it just, there needs to be a complexity to the story. It can't just be some simple crime and then you're done. You know, I can talk about any number of the ones that we've got coming up right now are incredibly powerful and exciting. One in particular that's coming up that's, you know, really just kind of the stop the nation in its tracks was the story around Gabby Petito. And we've got that coming, we've got that movie coming on this fall. We felt it was really important to tell her story, but also a big conversation around, well, Gabby had a lot of, you know, a high profile situation where everybody in the nation was basically trying to help find her. There's a lot of other women that go missing or a lot of other women that are victims of domestic violence. And we've got several other movies in development that will try to highlight some of those stories around those women who have also gone missing that might not have had such a big awareness across our country.
So you just raised the subject of domestic violence, for example. How often do the movies come with an outreach that the viewer has a call to action on, whether it is a movie dealing with domestic violence or missing persons, or, for example, breast cancer, which is in the focus of one of Lifetime's longest-running public service campaigns, Stop Breast Cancer for Life?
You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb and say that every one of them do. Lifetime original movie, we try to find a partner, especially dealing with domestic violence or, sexual violence, any range of issues that are concerns for women and our whole audience, quite frankly. We are constantly working with nonprofits and partners to raise awareness and try to get people the help that they need.
Mm-hmm. Amy Winter, Lifetime Television's Executive Vice President, Head of Programming, is our guest this first hour on our 50th anniversary live edition of Tomorrow Be Televised. Tom Abbott, I'm with you live from New York. Amy's live from Charlotte, North Carolina. We want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Amy, one of the things that has really separated Lifetime's made-for-TV movies from what other people do is the striving to have women write, produce, and direct these movies. How has that taken Lifetime into a whole new arena?
You know, I just think it's incredible. The energy that we have around, really giving people, so many people their first shot. We have programs where people shadow along the way. It is a priority for us to make sure that women's voices are heard in front of and behind the camera. So, we have often given people their first shot directing. Elizabeth Rome is a wonderful actress, and she's directing her third movie for us this year. You know, I can rattle off so many different names that have kind of had their first shot with Lifetime and then moved on to do amazing, incredible things. But it is, I feel like what you get from working with women behind the camera is complexity. I can't think of a single woman out there that's pure saint or pure sinner. We're all somewhere in between. And I really love the way women bring that tapestry to storytelling.
What, for somebody like Elizabeth, who many of us know as one of the assistant DAs on Law and Order, before that you may have heard of a TNT series called Bull that was produced here in New York, that was put together by Michael Knutson, one of the original producer-writers on Law and Order. How, you know, amazing how that strain, you know, just continues to grow and grow and flower all over the place with the Dick People and Dick Will family. But how does someone like Elizabeth get to flourish as a director? What inspires them to direct a Lifetime made-for-TV movie? And what did they learn along the way that allows them to, you know, to make a made-for-TV movie work?
You know, I feel like, you know, and this is purely conjecture on my part, but I think that learning by doing, you know, I feel like Elizabeth has such an amazing track record in front of the camera. And, you know, even in my own career, when I would see somebody over in another area that I wanted to learn, I was always just paying attention. I think that Elizabeth, we've had her primarily on our from the headlines, and her films are just a thrill ride. They're intense. They're so well acted, and I think that actors probably really respond to Elizabeth because of their background. But I really do think that she just has blossomed in that role, and that's why we keep coming back to her.
Mm-hmm. Who are some of the other women who have also blossomed like Elizabeth as directors of your made-for-TV movies?
Well, you know, I think Melissa Joan Hart has directed several for us, and she's doing another one for us this Christmas. Thora Birch is actually directing the Gabby Petito story and starring in that as well. So, and then we've got several women who come on board as EPs and are incredibly passionate about their projects, you know, working it all the way through development.
Mm-hmm. In recent years, your network has gone into two interesting directions with the made-for-TV movie. One is Christmas movies. How do you try to separate what you do holiday time with what everybody else is doing? It seems like almost every network, including the mega content services in recent years like Netflix and Hulu and Amazon, are doing holiday movies. On Roku, in fact, did their own holiday movie for the first time this past Christmas with Zoe's Extraordinary Christmas. We had Austin Weinberg, who was the creator of Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist on NBC, great series, by the way, that was involved with the making of that film.
Yeah, you know what? We get this asked this question a lot. I would say, you know, it's funny because I'm not sure that many people realize that Lifetime was actually the first network in the holiday movie business, and then in recent years have revived and replenished the season for sure. We come out. We are actually the network that has the most Christmas movies, if you consider that we have all of them on the one channel, and have had that for the past couple of years. What I would say is really important to us. We like to say we bring a little bit of spice with the sugar. We feel like ours feel pretty contemporary. We have a big musical element in a lot of what we do at Christmas. A lot of our key talent are also big music names. You know, last year we had Reba and Kelly Rowland, and so I think that that's a really important element that we know that our audiences enjoy. And the other thing is, you know, we really do try to bring diversity to our season. We want everybody to feel welcome and included and like they see themselves in our season. So that's been a pretty big point for us to make sure that we're delivering against.
Yeah. Amy, one of the other arenas that Lifetime has distinguished itself in with made-for-TV movies is what I would call the gothic horror. And probably the greatest example of that is Flowers in the Attic. It seems people cannot get enough of that kind of suspense film. And as we talked before we went on, you had a miniseries that was a prequel to this that we had the executive producer on our program a couple of weeks ago. Why has that blossomed into really a major made-for-TV movie franchise for you?
You know what? I grew up with V.C. Andrews and Flowers in the Attic, and I just think that for our audience, we all remember those books. And it was almost like that first book that you were like, ooh, am I going to get in trouble for reading this? This feels slightly naughty. We like to call them the Forbidden Love books. I think that's a great great name that Tanya Lopez, our head of scripted, came up with. But we actually, Lifetime and A&E actually owns the V.C. Andrews Library, so which is has an incredible 138 books to mine for your gothic tales as you describe them. We know they resonate. They've been going on the air since, I'm not sure when the first Flowers in the Attic went on, but each year we bring these out as a movie series and run them as a typically a four-part event. And people come back week on week to make sure that they, you know, follow that those storylines all the way through. This one has been terrific. Flowers in the Attic, the origin was something that actually sprung from one book. And we made it into four movies because we just thought the story was so rich that people would be so curious about what led Corinne to lock her kids up in the basement or in the attic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I understand that the viewership of this prequel series has been very well for all four episodes. Is there now some maybe conversation going on that maybe, just maybe, Lifetime might do more in the miniseries arena or limited series arena?
Yes. I think that there's something to be had there for sure. This is something that we've consistently done with V.C. Andrews and Flowers, where we've run them in subsequent weeks. But we do have other content that does recur. We have on Lifetime, we have the Seven Deadly Sins series that we've done with T.D. Jakes, and we've rolled those out two at a time, and they've done quite well for us too. There are other avenues I think that we're taking a look at right now in terms of you know, basically putting together series and wheels of movies, because I do think that there's a really strong opportunity for us to grow audience, because people want to come back and hear more about their characters that they fall in love with, or a similar type of story to what they see in each Seven Deadly Sin, which is a great example. We're just working our way through greed and envy, pride, lust. You know, I don't think that gluttony is sounds like too much fun, but we'll figure that one out.
Does anybody come up to you these days and say, you know what, I remember Lifetime for being the home of some of the best scripted series featuring women, like Any Day Now, which was a tremendous show that ran forcing with the unforgettable pairing of Annie Potts and Lorraine Toussaint. It probably one of the best series on any network about racism that has ever been produced in scripted form. Or Strong Medicine, which was a very popular show, at one point featured Whoopi Goldberg in a major role. Or some of the other Lifetime scripted series that in days gone by. And they say, like, hey, why not bring that back? Why not bring that movie? You were such a force in scripted series. Why not bring that back at some point, if not near future, far future?
Yeah, you know what? It's something that we ask ourselves routinely. You know, I remember being a viewer of all those things as well, the client list, you know, the list goes on and on. I think that some of the experimentation that we're doing right now, some of the movies that we've got going on right now, we look at ourselves and go, is there an opportunity for a series off of this movie or not? That might be the initial way that we dip a toe in, is to do, you know, a movie that could act as a backdoor pilot for us. I don't have any currently in production now on the scripted series side, but to your point, you know, Lifetime has an incredible legacy in the space and, you know, in cable across the board. And I do think that it's something that if we can find the right project that really resonates with our audience, we might give that a swing.
Mm-hmm. How are things going on the unscripted series side?
Really good. We have, as you know, we have Married at First Sight, which continues to fascinate viewers on Wednesday nights. We're actually the top on network on Wednesday nights with that show. And right behind it, we just launched a new dating experiment show, which is a lot of fun. It's called Five Guys a Week. And what we love about this show is, again, it's a little bit of an experiment. But this time the woman is in the driver's seat. We work with women. Each episode is one woman. And our teams work with her to kind of pick out five different guys that she might be interested in. And they move in with her no matter what her living arrangement is. We film this in the tri-state area, so we have, you know, two-bedroom apartments, single-bedroom apartments, you know, homes and whatnot. They have to move into the living situation that she is in. So we've got guys bunking up or all over the floor. And over the course of the time frame, she is eliminating them one by one until hopefully she gets down to the one that she wants to spend some time with. So it has been incredibly fun. All of the women are very different. We have fixed rig cameras in there, so there's no camera crews in there with them. This is just them being them and sharing those close confines and all the comedy and drama that ensues in that. So we've got that. Oh, and then I should mention, too, that all the true crime that we do in movies, we recently this summer launched a true crime unscripted night. So we've got Life and Crime on Mondays, and we have two new series on the air with that night right now. One is called Hashtag Text Me When You Get Home, which is a hashtag that women know very well and share amongst ourselves all the time. And then we have another one called Frogging. That's P-H-R-O-G-G-I-N-G, Hider in the House. And that is a crazy kind of show where, yes, it is true, there are people who have been hiding in people's homes while they are living there, and they are none the wiser until just the stunning moment where they suddenly figure out, oh my God, that those noises I'm hearing, the food that's been missing, the bumps in the night, that's a person that's been living with me.
You are hearing Amy Winter. She is Lifetime Television's Executive Vice President, Head of Programming, and she is our guest this first hour of our two-hour live 50th anniversary special here on Tomorrow Be Televised. Amy is joining us this hour from Charlotte, North Carolina. Time out with you up north from New York, where it is now 72 degrees near the bottom of the hour. And if you have a question or comment for Amy, give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use that chat room, SimonApple04 by name. Our good friend from Philadelphia, Rick Webb, is already in the room. First of three episodes, not only celebrating our 50th anniversary, but kicking off year 16 this week here on Tomorrow Be Televised. We'll be back with you Wednesday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. Coming up on Wednesday, you'll hear about a brand-new network that's been operating under the radar screen for a little bit. They call it the Netflix for Native American Content Creators and Producers. It's called Red Nation, and you will hear the founder of the network. Her name is Janelle Romero. Plus, we'll talk to the host executive producer of a new Roku attraction called B is for Vino. That means wine. We'll talk about Vincent Antor. And then Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, my lead guest will be one of the nominees for the Primetime Emmy Award for Best Guest Actor in a Comedy. He got the nomination for his work as a casino owner on the popular HBO Max series Hacks. He's someone that you might not recognize by name. You do, however, by face. His name is Christopher McDonald. He has had an amazing career. He's also had a career where at times he's portrayed some of those interesting TV personalities, real and fictional. I'm talking about Mel Allen, the voice of the Yankees, in the HBO movie about Roger Maris breaking Babe Ruth's record called 61, and Jack Barry, the game show producer and host in the Robert Redford film Quiz Show. Oh, yeah, Ward Cleaver in the Leave It to Beaver movie. I'm talking about Christopher McDonald. He's our lead guest on Friday. And then we'll meet the chief executive officer of a new venture that is out to cause more new television programming. How? Through things like Web3, NFTs, and others. The project is called Entertainment, M-I-N-T, and they're already working with a TV festival that will be coming your way from Duluth, Minnesota, next in September. We're talking about Entertainment's Chief Executive Officer, Genevieve Sears. That's all coming up Wednesday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And when we come back with Amy Winter, we'll find out what Lifetime is up to this coming season. We'll also get her take on the controversy of made-for-TV movies not getting their fair due from the Emmy Awards. It's happening again. We'll get her thoughts on that. And we'll get her general thoughts on where TV is going from here. More of Amy Winter and our classic trivia question segment after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, your home for the best internet radio 24/7, and reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Don't forget, every weekday, including tomorrow, at 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 Pacific on BTR, it's Kings in the Morning. Join Dave King and crew for a lot of great music, conversation, and a lot of fun in between. That's Kings in the Morning with Jay King and crew tomorrow, 11 a.m. Eastern, 8 a.m. Pacific, right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, that's BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to the second half of hour number one of Tomorrow Be Televised. I'm with you on our 50th anniversary special live for New Haven, New York. Happy to have you aboard. Welcome to those of you just joining us at the bottom of the hour. And if a question or comment for our first guest, make that phone ring, 646-652-2906. Or use the chat room, SimonApple04 by name, our good friend Rick Webb already in the room. And once again, we are back live from Charlotte, North Carolina, with Executive Vice President, Head of Programming at Lifetime Television, Amy Winter. Amy, what's on the agenda for Lifetime this coming season?
Well, we are continuing our summer with our unscripted series. Like I mentioned, we've got the relationship stuff on Wednesdays and crime on Mondays. And the remainder of August, we've got a fun little thing that we're trying. It's called Love, Lies, and Seduction. And it's a handful of about five or six movies where we're trying our version of romance, which is just a little bit edgier than what you would think a TV movie romance would be. So, there might be a little bit of a thriller element in it, but those couples might end up in a good place. And then after that, we on Labor Day, thrilled to have McKenna Grace back on our air in The Bad Seed Returns. The Bad Seed was an incredible movie for Lifetime. McKenna was in it when she was tiny, quite frankly, and starred with Rob Lowe. And then what I think is just absolutely remarkable is McKenna and her father, actually, at the beginning of the pandemic, had a lot of free time and thought, we're going to write a sequel. And they did, and they sent it to us, and it was incredibly twisted and just good fun. So we've got that coming on Labor Day, and then after that we go for a big old run of Rip from the Headlines movies that are all pretty stunning. It's some stories from swindlers to children that have been basically chained in their homes, which is an incredible story that sort of mirrors something that you might be familiar with out in the, this is a Dick Wolf kind of approach one. And then continuing on, the stories that we try to tell about incredible women who have really overcome horrific situations. We've got Girl in Room 13, which is just a powerful movie starring Anne Heche. And yeah, just lots of goodies coming your way.
Yeah. Let's go back to The Bad Seed for a second, because for those who don't know, The Bad Seed is based on a Broadway play by Max Landis. It became a very controversial movie produced by Warner Brothers in the late 1950s. I've seen the film many times on Turner Classic Movies. I think there's both good and bad in the film. I will say this, I think the ending is better than the play. However, Warner Brothers botched it. I'm not going to tell you how, but I think they made a stupid move at the end of the film that they should not have done. There have been other attempts to adapt The Bad Seed for television and for films. What was it like to adapt such a property for Lifetime?
You know what, and this predates me, but I do know that when we were talking about The Bad Seed Returns is that there was a lot of learning. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people talked about that original movie and how they wanted to make sure that some of the errors in the way it was portrayed were corrected. I think they did it right. They had an incredible response to the movie. And, you know, no small testament to McKenna and Rob Lowe for pulling that off.
Yeah. Just to be clear, my issues with the movie is number one, I thought it was way too stagey. That's the original Warner Brothers movie. I thought it was way too stagey. Mm-hmm. I thought Nancy Kelly's performance was too whiny, and it was whiny like from start to finish. It didn't evolve. It didn't grow, except to be more whiny. I thought Pat McCormick was wonderful. The music by Alex North, by the way, one of the great film TV composers of all time, was fantastic. And again, I thought the ending was wonderful, and then Warner Brothers botched it, and they didn't need to. And I'll just leave it at that.
God. Well, I just can't. I think that McKenna Grace is just one of the greatest actresses. You know, I absolutely, when you watch this film, she's just, there's just a tension when you watch her. Like, okay, you have no idea what she's going to do. And I think that is just one of the best elements to a thriller, is just feeling like you're on edge the entire time, and she delivers that.
Yeah, the mother performance, what I'm talking about with Nancy Kelly, that is a very important performance. If that doesn't work, then a lot of things fall apart. I will say one other thing about the original movie. Eileen Eckhart, wonderful late great stage actress, and also won the Oscar for Butterflies of Free. She delivers a wonderful performance. She outacts everybody in that film. That her performance as the mother of, I don't want to give too much of the plot away, but the mother of a very important child in the movie, apart from the bad seed, delivers a marvelous performance. It's so rich and tears your gut out when you see it. So if you do see the bad seed, see it for Eileen Eckhart's performance. It is a masterpiece in a otherwise mixed film. So that's my personal thought, just to let you know. You know, at one point, back in the 1990s, Amy, Lifetime was the home of some really great game shows. Shop Till You Drop, Supermarket Sweep, Rodeo Drive. There was one that Gina St. John, who was the host of The Essential, did. They ran like a year or two. Any thoughts about maybe Lifetime getting back into the game show world?
You know what? And I think I watched all those shows. No, we haven't really talked about getting back into the game show business. I feel like it would be a little bit of a left turn for our audiences, because, you know, I really do feel like they come to us because they want to hear stories. And those shows are just a little bit more, you know, pure snack food experiential.
Yeah. Amy, not so long ago, the made-for-television movie was right up there with the what I would call the other three of what I'd say the big four Emmy categories for scripted television: comedy series, drama series, miniseries, and made-for-TV movie. And it was as much a highlight, if not sometimes more. In fact, many times it was the last award given at the Primetime Emmy Awards. Now, the made-for-TV movie comes across as a genre that sort of gets the bums rushed by the Television Academy. For the second year in a row, the TV movie, as they call it, the Outstanding TV Movie category, is not going to be in the Primetime Emmy Awards show. Again, it's going to be in the Creative Arts category, which very few people relatively watch. For the last couple of years, the acting categories combine made-for-TV movie and limited series or miniseries. And personal thought, there is no way that you can compare made-for-TV movie acting or writing or directing for a format that is 90 minutes or 2 hours to miniseries acting, writing, directing that is like 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours and so forth. What's your thoughts about why the TV Academy is doing this?
You know what? First, I got to say, I completely agree with you. It's just a completely different art form, the movies are, as compared to limited series. You know, I'm not sure why. I just think maybe they felt like there was an explosion of categories and they wanted to try to do some, you know, and then I think maybe it might be the introduction of the limited series because, you know, putting them up against regular series, there was a lot of blowback from that. So is that a whole new category? I would argue, yeah, that seems like that would be the case. But I do think that what happens is it does diminish the efforts on the part of the made-for-TV movie. I think that there it crowds the category with some, you know, obviously incredible limited series. But I think that there's incredible made-for-TV movies that really aren't getting their shot because there's just too many in the category.
And there's more people doing made-for-TV movies. As I mentioned before, Roku is now doing made-for-TV. They have one of the big ones coming up is the Weird Al Yankovic movie with Daniel Radcliffe, who I saw clips of, and I can tell you that could be a contender in that category next year based on the clips I saw of him playing Weird Al Yankovic. So you now have smart TV sets and smart TV devices making made-for-TV movies. You have, you know, your network and Hallmark Channel and Movies and Mysteries and Up and BET and on and on and on. Is there any way that, let's say, all of these services can get together and talk to the TV Academy and say, look, it's time to put up. We're sick and tired of this. We want our due. Give us individual categories for acting, writing, and directing. Don't put us in competition with miniseries or anthology shows, et cetera.
I would welcome the conversation. I do think that we need to have it. I think that it has gotten too broad. And to your point, with the amount of people who are doing pure made-for-TV movies alone, we got a lot of great competition in there. And I do think it deserves its own categories. I think that they would be filled with very strong contenders.
I agree, totally, absolutely. And give you another example of where the craziness comes in. We had earlier this year the producer of The Survivor, the HBO movie, which a lot of people think could be the winner for the made-for-TV movie categories, and one of the odds-on favorites. Ben Foster's performance as the Holocaust survivor of the film has been critically acclaimed, and he's not nominated for actor in that category because he's crowded out by all the miniseries nominees. And it's like crazy. How can you know? You can put the movie in, but you can't put the actor who got the critical acclaim playing that role. It's crazy. And by the way, we would love to facilitate a dialogue. If the TV Academy people would like to come on this program, I would love to hear them, and maybe we can get a dialogue going. I really hope so, because I think the made-for-TV movie genre, again, personal thought, really deserves its own set of categories and not be crowded into somebody else.
I concur.
Amy Winter, a lifetime television executive VP and head of programming, is joining us live from Charlotte, North Carolina, this hour on our two-hour 15th anniversary special. Happy to have you aboard. Simon Abbott, I'm with you live from New Haven, New York, 72 degrees at this very minute here in the Big Apple. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, SimonApple04. My name. Coming up for the top of the hour, classic trivia question. We got a nice one for you, and you could win three prizes if you are first with the correct answers. We need that opportunity before the top of the hour. And coming up in our next hour, Ryan Chinatry, the general manager of the fast-rising mega content services, Topic. Lots from him to say, and he'll do that in our second hour. So, Amy, what's your general thoughts about where TV is going? What kind of future are you seeing, let's say, for the next couple of years, the rest of this decade?
Well, you know, I mean, it's about choices, right? I mean, it's just an absolute content explosion. And that content is living a lot of different places. I was listening to all the places that I can find your program earlier. And, you know, you are absolutely multi-platform, right? So I think that we understand that, you know, we're all viewers and consumers too. And we're all trying to figure out, okay, that show that I heard about, where do I find that? For Lifetime and for our brand, there's a few things going in our channel. There's a few things going on. Obviously, we believe that cable is truly meaningful. We have a great audience that shows up to us, And so, you know, we continue to make sure that that's very healthy. But I think one of the pivots in our mindset has been and should always be that Lifetime's brand means something. And it's amazing to be able to say that, to, you know, to walk up to somebody and say, I work for Lifetime Television, and women know exactly what the brand stands for. They know that it's television for women by women, and they can, you know, repeat back to me some of the stuff that we do. That's meaningful headspace to have. And so what we want to do, you know, for our purposes is make sure that our linear channel stays competitive, stays healthy, but anything that we do content-wise, if it's going to travel beyond that, that it's got that brand stamp on it, that it's only going to grow more viewership for what Lifetime brings to the table when it comes to content.
What do you think about the fact that content can come from anywhere, whether it's a podcast that gets adapted into a television series, whether it comes out of an NFT creation that becomes a television series, or that it gets funded by crowdfunding, or gets funded through cryptocurrency, or it comes as a pilot from a TV festival or a film festival, which is now running more and more TV pilots as part of their programming. Do you find that fascinating that all of these different, or webtoons, for example, another source of content? What do you think about all these content sources and all these ways that you can find material for the network you want to do?
Oh, I think it's fascinating and it's exciting. You know, I one of the shows that I thought was just so remarkable when it went on the scene, I was like, you know what? I used to think, like, how can you come up with another cooking show? Like have they all been done? Is there any new way to do it? And then I got to say, I'm a huge fan of Nailed It. You know, like that took a conversation that we all had online and laughed about how bad our cakes were by comparison to these perfect things that were coming out, and made it into a show. I mean, that I felt like was just a genius way to take what was going on out there in culture and say, I can make some content out of that. So I really feel like the ideas can come anywhere. There have been a number of things that, you know, I might hear something in a conversation and it might spark us to go like explore a path. And all of our teams are constantly looking out there for inspiration, but it can come from anywhere. And there are so many people out there getting into the business and creating it, you know, new voices and approaches coming to the table. So I just think it's a really exciting time. It's just going to be interesting to see how much of this can actually make a meaningful connection, because there's just a plethora of content for people to get through.
Also, what do you think about the growing role that women are playing in television, where they're not only writing and producing and directing and creating and doing the cinematography and the filming and so forth for all this content, but they're also creating new television networks. Many of the new TV networks that are running through smart TV sets and smart devices and fast channels and multi-channel bundles, a big chunk of them, are being put together by women, and they're also being caused by women of color. As I mentioned on Wednesday, we're going to showcase a project that was once to be the Netflix for Native American creative content called Red Nation. A woman put that together. Entertainment, which is this organization that wants to use Web3 and NFTs and others to get new TV series off the ground and all sorts of places, there's a woman behind that, and they're working with a TV festival to put it together. It's just amazing how the role of women, particularly in the last year or two, has really elevated to be more than just creating shows. It's creating environments. It's creating networks. It's creating, you know, all sorts of different approaches to television.
I agree, and I just think it's time. You know, it's been time for a while, but I think that some in the past 5 years, maybe a little bit more. You know, I personally had started to notice, you know, it would annoy me when I would go to see a movie and the only women, female roles in it were, you know, they were sidelined and they were caricatures. They didn't have the same emotional depth as the male roles that are in these movies. And that's fine. That, you know, that's choices that project made. But I found myself gravitating to projects like, Hello Sunshine does a great job of this, where there's complexity to the stories and the women inside them. And I think that, you know, if you've been in the business of entertaining women for a really long time, you get that. You get that we're really, really tired of just having this kind of paper cutout version of what people think women are like. So I applaud everybody getting in there and telling not only stories that have more depth to them, but also highlight stories of women like I'm excited to hear about Red Nation that might not have gotten any screen time before. So it's a really important moment for us to tell ourselves stories that we want to hear.
And by the way, this is also not only happening with networks aimed at, for example, Native Americans, but also Asian Americans, Latino Americans, African Americans, et cetera, et cetera. Television just announced that a woman is going to be their new executive vice president of programming content. We're going to have that in our News No Quickies coming up at the top of the hour. Chime TV, a network for Asian Americans, which is going to go on Charter cable systems, other cable systems, smart TV sets. There's a woman behind that venture. So it's just really remarkable. In the time remaining, Amy, how ambitious do you see Lifetime getting over the course of the rest of this decade? What new directions would you like to see your service go into, or services perhaps go into? Do you see, by the way, your service becoming interactive, where let's say for some of the programming you do multiple versions of the show and the viewer can pick which way they want the plot to go or how they want the episode or the movie to end?
That's a really fun idea. Maybe we can try to figure that out with Five Guys a Week. That could be fun for people to tell the woman that maybe this guy's the wrong guy for her. I would say, you know, what we're really focused on right now is consistently entertaining our audience to know that they, you know, as the leading producer of television movies, that they can count on us to bring consistent, compelling storytelling to them at all times. I'm focused on growing that unscripted pipeline with the introduction of crime and potentially some new nights in the forthcoming year. And then we want to make sure that we bring these massive events that we've been able to bring. You brought up Mahalia Jackson and Clark Sisters. Last year we had a biopic on Salt and Peppa and Wendy Williams that did phenomenally well. And then this year we really had a cultural moment around a documentary that we partnered with Janet Jackson on. And that, to me, really showed the power of television and the power of live TV and cable's ability to bring a shared experience and cultural moment together with everybody watching something at one time. So that is something that we want to be able to see if we can replicate as we move forward, because it was just a phenomenal experience all around.
How can it be replicated? For example, Amazon next month is going to finally bring on The Lord of the Rings. And a lot of people think that is going to draw a huge audience and sort of be their super shining moment. Also, later this month, HBO has House of the Dragons, which is their new Game of Thrones offshoot, and they're expecting that to be their, you know, shining moment. For you, for Lifetime, what kind of thing would you like to see as that shining moment, let's say, that catapults your network to the next level?
I think it will continue to be wrapped around telling incredible women's stories. I think that is We have shown at Lifetime that we're a very good partner in terms of listening to the people that we profile and how they want their story told. So I think that it's those moments where if we can find these amazing women and who are ready to tell their story and give them that platform, you know, live TV is unlike anything else. Even if something drops on, you know, a service, we're not all synced up at the same time. We're not all reacting to the same revelation at the same time. And I think that that's the true power that we have. And I think we had over 20 million people watch Janet Jackson, which is their Super Bowl numbers, you know. So it's pretty compelling.
Lifetime Television. It's available on cable and satellite and other ways all over the nation and in some ways, shape, or form around the world, too. So check your local listings where Lifetime TV is available in your area on cable and satellite, also smart TV sets and smart devices. And for more details about the service on what it's up to down the road online, here's where you go, www.mylifetime.com. That's www.mylifetime.com. Amy Winter, thank you very, very much for this wonderful hour kicking off our 15th anniversary episode. It has been a great pleasure to have you on, and I also want to really congratulate all of the Lifetime people that we've had in this program over the last 15 years. Thank them for being on, whether they produce series or specials or whatever, and thank you to the wonderful PR staff over the years for the great work they do on a day-to-day basis to make Lifetime happen.
They are amazing. And I want to say again, congrats to you. That is just a remarkable track record. And I wish you all the best for 15 more.
Same here with you, Amy, and your network and your people. Thanks again for doing this. And let's do this again soon. Take care. All the very greatest.
Okay, thank you.
Amy Winter, Head of Programming, Executive Vice President of Lifetime Television, joining us live from Charlotte, North Carolina. Coming up in our next hour, we have Ryan Chinatry. He's the general manager of one of the fastest-rising mega-content services from First Look Studios, Topic. He will join me live from Brooklyn, New York. But first, time for our classic trivia segment that we do every episode. And for those of you that are joining for the very first time, it goes like this. We pose a question, and if you're first with the correct answer, you email it. You get prizes. In this case, three prizes. We have two best-selling books, both from former TWBC guests. One is called The Unexpected Danny Grant, a novel by Paul Freeman that may be considered as a new television series down the road. And from the PR guru on the West Coast, one of the very best, Dan Harari, we've got Flirting with Fame. It's an amazing book about his wonderful work with some of the superstars, TV and otherwise, over his long career. And we have the Nickelodeon Loud House Christmas card set, too. And they're all yours if you know the answer to this question. Complete the title of this Cartoon Network hit series, Hi Hi, blank blank. Complete the title of this popular Cartoon Network hit series, Hi Hi, that's H-I-H-I, blank blank. If you know the answer, email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's simonapple04@yahoo.com. Don't forget to enclose your name and where you're emailing from. If you've already won before, you're not eligible. And let's hear from you, because sooner you get your email in, sooner your chance to win. And if we don't get a winner by the end of today, we post the question tomorrow morning on Facebook and Twitter. Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. That's Facebook at Simon Applebaum, Twitter at UBC Simon TWBT. And if we do get a winner before our next episode, we'll have it for you on our next episode, which is coming your way Wednesday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific, second of our three triple header episodes for this week as we wrap up year 15 and we kick off year 16 in a big way. Again, coming your way on our program on August 3rd, we will have the founder of Red Nation TV Network, Janelle Romero, and from the new Roku attraction, V is for Vino, host and executive producer, Vincent Antor. One more time, let's give you that question. And remember, three prizes in play. Complete the title of this Cartoon Network hit series, Hi Hi, blank blank. SimonApple04@yahoo.com. That's the email address you use to be in to win. So do so quickly, and all the very best. We come back live from Nueva York. I'll be joined by Ryan Chinatry, the general manager of Topic. And I'll also have some anniversary thoughts about where we've gone this last 12 months and where we're headed. And news no quickies, too. All that begins at the top of the hour, coming your way on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, and TuneIn Radio, together reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Every weekend, it's Post Time with the Greek on BTR. Check it out. Saturday and Sunday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific. All the news you want to know about sports and what's coming up for a big weekend, whether it's golf, whether it's basketball like TBT and the Big Three tournaments, baseball, and all the other great sports going on. Post Time with the Greek, 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 a.m. Pacific, Saturday and Sunday, right here exclusively on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best BTR 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome to the second hour of Tamarvi Televised 15th Anniversary Special, coming to you live from New Haven, York. Well, as you're joining us at the top of the hour, Sam Ambaum with you. Great to have you with us as we mark 15 years of the promo about TV's current and future. We have a wonderful guest coming your way over the next hour, and we invite you to be part of the program. All you have to do is pick up the phone and make a call with your question or feedback. It's 646-652-2906. That's 646-652-2906. The number is good anywhere you are catching us across the country, around the globe, here on Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, TuneIn Radio. If you're shy about the phone, that is no problem with us, because we got a chat room for you. It's Simon Apple 04 by name. Our very good friend, Rick Rep from Philadelphia, already in the room. You find it at our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. So use the phone or the room. Either way, we will hear you. And we will hear the general manager of Topic, Ryan Chinatry, who will join me here in New Haven, York, after we have a round of News Note Quickies. The Weakest Link will stay on NBC for a third season. Jane Lynch continues as host and co-executive producer with 20 new episodes coming up. Women of Wrestling, ANA WOW, will return to TV via local station syndication the weekend of September 17th. Takers of the former AXS TV series include stations owned by CBS, Sinclair, Nexstar, Tegna, and Hearst. Former Univision TV tech executive Sandra Smester joins Telemundo this month as executive vice president of programming and content development. Cindy Lauper and Jesse Machado will team up for new Amazon series, The Horror of Dolores Roach. The show adapts a popular Spotify podcast. ABC has its co-hosts for the next CMA Awards ceremony November 9th, Luke Bryan and Peyton Manning. Estrella Media is rolling out a 24/7 movie or cine channel on smart TV sets and devices. LG is the first provider for the Spanish language service. And season 2 of Who's Unscripted, The Emilio Show, begins on September 28th. And that is News Notes for today. Our second guest on this 15th anniversary special will join us for most of the hour. He comes your way from here in New Haven, York. He is the general manager of the fastest rising mega content services, Topic, from First Look Studios. He was with us originally on this program late last fall. He is back with us again right now. Joining us, Ryan Chinatry. Ryan, thank you again for being here.
Hey, Simon. Thanks for having me, and congratulations on this big anniversary.
Thank you very, very much. It is a big one. 15 years is amazing roller coaster, as Amy Winter, our guest last hour, would say, and it's been a fantastic roller coaster to have. And Ryan, I really appreciate you coming back on the program. Ryan, over this last year, Topic has made some interesting changes in what it does and how it does it. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we've really been focusing on crime and thrillers the last year and a half now, and especially over the past 6 months, increasing our focus on true crime. So that's been a really exciting shift, and we've seen our audiences respond very positively to that. So both scripted true crime, but also increasingly into some of the elevated unscripted true crime programming. And we've had a couple big releases the last couple quarters, and we have a couple series coming up, including Murder at the Cottage this week from Jim Sheridan, which was a big hit in the UK on Sky, and we're really excited to bring it over to the U.S. and give audiences the chance to observe the case that Jim's been working on for quite a few years now.
I want to come back to that. That is happening later this week, and it's a big get because Jim Sheridan, who many people remember as a top film director, he guided Daniel Day-Lewis to his Oscar win for My Left Foot, an amazing film, by the way, and a breakthrough movie in so many ways. And it's been quite a while since we have heard from him, either scripted or unscripted, whether for television or for film. I want to get back to that in a second. But why, when so many players are in the true crime game, including Lifetime, which we just heard from Amy Winter, what can Topic bring to the table in that genre?
Yeah, great question. Well, we're really focused first, I think, on the scripted side. There's so many amazing, elevated, premium scripted crime dramas from all across the world that don't get a chance to be seen in the U.S. and Canada. So that's really where we're hyper-focused, bringing the best of all of those shows. And, you know, I think the shows on topic are, you know, they have a particular tone and feel. We really look to that premium visual style, and for filmmakers that are really passionate about the stories that they take on. So that's sort of what we see as our niche. And while there's certainly many many players in that crime space, we're really the home for the crime lover who just wants to be able to watch you know, series after series. That's really where we see our sweet spot. And on the unscripted side, we think there's similar programming, things that kind of can almost feel so crazy that they, you know, you don't know if they're real or not. And we think that's kind of our sweet spot. We're looking for really elevated, specially crafted from filmmakers such as Jim that are taking on really important cases or really important social justice issues in the crime arena. So that's kind of how we're trying to stay apart from all of the other great options. We think there is a difference in those types of series. And if you really like that type of lens, that type of approach, you know, Topic is the place to come and really be super served for that type of style.
Ryan, you've had great success with Topic, finding these masterpieces from all over the world. In this genre of true crime, do you find that no matter where specifically or what country the program comes from, whether it's Australia, whether it is Spain, whether it is Africa, South Africa, wherever, that there are commonalities in terms of how the subject is treated, or are there some very unique things that, let's say, producers from this country versus that country bring to the production of true crime, whether it's scripted or unscripted?
Interesting. Yeah, I think there's definitely probably more commonalities than not in the way that these stories are told. South Africa is a great example of a market that's really been doing a lot of interesting work in the scripted crime space. We don't have a series from there yet, but we do hope to be able to bring one over the next year or so. And I think Germany is another interesting place. We had a great series later last year called Dark Woods. It kind of uses that similar Nordic noir crime feel, but puts it through the kind of a little bit more of a glossy kind of German lens. We really saw that the audience responded well to that. And it was just a slightly different take, but still kind of holds true to an investigation. Mostly the commonality we see is that, you know, there's really strong narrative investigations, both in the sense of a crime investigation, but also in the way the story is being unfolded for the audience. And I think that's, and we try to find that relatable common piece, and we'll know that even although the setting might be different or the style might be different, certainly the language is different, we're pretty confident that the audience will respond to the series at the end of the day, even if they're from two totally different parts of the world.
Mm-hmm. We asked Amy Winner at Lifetime last hour if there was a science to not only producing made-for-TV movies, but also finding them, figuring out when to schedule them and so forth. Is there a science or topic for your service in not only where you find the content, but how you schedule it, how you program it, who you have do it?
I think there's a little science, but I think it's probably mostly art. I think finding the series is really about relationships and understanding the state of the market and who's playing in the types of spaces that we really respond to tonally. So that's a big part of it, I think, is just pure art there. On the scheduling side, I mean, we really try to give the audience something interesting every week. So we kind of look at what we have coming. We want to vary things up month to month, right? We don't want to release maybe two things that are very similar close together. We like to kind of give the audience a bit of a story over over their experience with us through the year. So sometimes, you know, as I mentioned, the last couple months, we've really been highlighting the scripted true crime. That will sort of take us into this week, and then we'll move more into sort of scripted space through the rest of the year. So, you know, it's a lot of conversations internally. It's a lot of understanding what else is happening in the market, how are other streamers releasing, and it's a lot of maintaining great connections and relationships to our distributor partners, to our producing partners, to our directors, you know, all across the world to make it come together.
Hmm. Has there been any impact because of Squid Game and how Netflix was able to find that project from Asia and turn it into a worldwide phenomenon? Are there any lessons from that that you're learning with Topic when it comes to utilizing content from around the world?
Yeah, I think for us it's just been really great to see the amount of hours that American audiences have embraced foreign series, especially foreign crime series, like Squid Game, like Money Heist, like Lupin. And that gives us great confidence that there's so many of those out there that if we're able to bring them to the market in the right form, there's a huge audience. I mean, there's millions and millions of Americans watching these series that have existed before. I mean, not specifically Squid Game, right? But there are countless examples of European and Asian crime dramas that have existed in those local markets. And I think one of the big things we're excited about, which we'll be releasing next month, is our first series with dubs. So that, I think, is a big turning point for Topic, and will open up the accessibility of the service to a much larger audience in the U.S., to the types of viewers at home who are watching these series on Netflix and especially, and will now be able to watch things like Pagan Peak and The Original Killing and The Original Bridge in a dubbed version for the first time. We love subtitles. We think they're important and a critical part of you know, moving film and television around the world, but we also know that sometimes people need to watch in with dubs for a variety of reasons. So I think that's going to be a big change for us and really bring an audience to these series that you know, that they haven't been able to enjoy them previously.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back to the Jim Sheridan program coming up later this week. This could be a blockbuster for your network because, number one, if you know Jim Sheridan, you know he's not been really active in producing film or television for a long time. And secondly, because of his reputation as a top filmmaker, because of films like My Left Foot, which I mentioned earlier, Daniel Day-Lewis was directed to his first Oscar win. What led Jim Sheridan to get back into the filmmaking scene or the TV making scene, and what about this case propelled him to say, this is how I want to do it. This is my vehicle to get back in the game.
Yeah, I think that this is a very personal story from what I understand for Jim. And, you know, he saw that this case has been unresolved for, you know, so many years, and he picked up some inconsistencies about what was happening and how it was investigated. And I think he's been working on this story, including the documentary, for more than 7 years now, and it just has become a very critical and important point for him to get to the bottom of what really happened to Sophie. And of course, there's been the Netflix series, which came out, I think, last year, and you know, I think Jim feels like there was a lot that was missed in that, and that this is his chance, his opportunity to do justice for Sophie and to really detail out this status of what happened, where things are left, and what can be done now to find justice for her. So we hope, like you said, that viewers find this to be fascinating and that it is going to be a big blockbuster, but also that it will continue to draw attention to this case. It is not resolved yet, and I think that sometimes true crime can play a role in resolving what happened or providing more pressure on the authorities to look into things. So we're very honored to have this series from him, and we hope that our service will play a small role in continuing to bring attention to what happened.
When the decision is made for a service like yours to go from one outlook on programming to the true crime outlook, whether it's dramatized or it's unscripted, how do you prepare the audience, your viewers, your subscribers, to be ready for this without coming off as jarring to them after being adjusted to this way, this is how Topic does things for so long?
Yeah, I think in our case, it was a fairly smooth transition because while we launched with the broader set of programming, crime, thriller, suspense, mysteries, they were really at the core of the initial launch of the service. So there have been examples over the past year of series that we unfortunately aren't able to continue because they're not in that lane, and that is disappointing to some of our viewers who write in asking for subsequent seasons. But I think that the overwhelming majority of why people have subscribed to Topic have been for things like The Bridge and The Killing. And now that we've really settled into that group, we're finding that, you know, we're able to, as I mentioned earlier, really super serve that, and that each subsequent series gaining traction more quickly than the last, and people are excited to see something new. So thankfully in our case, it hasn't been too difficult to manage. There are great comedies and great maybe straight up dramas that we would love to be able to bring. That, you know, it is a little bit disappointing maybe to have to say no to some of those things now. But for the moment, I think this lane is really working for us, and I think the audience is responding similarly. And we'll just kind of see where it takes us.
You're hearing Ryan Chinatry. He is the general manager of the mega content service Topic from First Look Studios, and he joins us live this hour on Tomorrow Be Televised, the second hour of our 15th anniversary live special, coming your way on the first Monday of August and the first day of August, 2022. So I'm with you live from New Weather York, where Ryan is at right now also, and especially in my favorite borough, BKLYN. And if you have a question or comment for Ryan, make a call, 646-652-2906, or use the chat room, Simon Apple 04 by name. Last summer, your service ran a program that probably is going to end up one of the most controversial shows that ran on television last year. And actually, PBS ran it first, then you did. It's called Philly DA. Talk about that series.
Oh, yeah. That's, I think, one of our, one of the things I'm most proud of. We did a co-production with PBS, ITVS, and it's about the rise of a progressive DA in Philadelphia, Larry Krasner, who ran for and won election. He actually recently was reelected. And this series is quite incredible. The filmmakers were on the ground with him during his initial primary campaign through to the election campaign and his first year in office. And it really gives the viewer sort of unprecedented access to a transition like this in a city like Philadelphia. And, I think it that fly-on-the-wall approach is pretty shocking, is pretty fascinating and interesting. And you get to see how someone like Larry comes in, kind of sets up his own shop and has to maneuver the police, community ambassadors, his own staff, protesters and advocates who helped bring him to office who are unhappy with him. You really get to see this mixture of the entire community come together around this pretty unusual event, being a progressive district attorney being elected, which has been happening the last couple of years across many other cities as well. So we're really proud of that series. It did, I think, great on PBS. It's been really solid for us. I think there's still a lot of people who haven't had a chance to see it, and I'd really encourage anyone who's interested in politics and, to take a look. And it won a Peabody this year, which was pretty amazing to show kind of the impact that it's had.
Many critics who have seen the show liken it as the unscripted version of the iconic HBO series The Wire. What do you think of that comparison, and why do you think critics were so keen on making that comparison?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, it's a pretty high bar to be compared to The Wire. So, we're grateful for those who felt that it was similar. I think it's just because of how real and gritty it is. I mean, it you really are getting to be in conference rooms that you normally never would. You're really getting to see experiences that don't even seem like they can be possible as you're watching interactions between him and his staff and the community and the police. So I think The Wire did such a good job of dramatizing what was happening in Baltimore at the time, and this is very similar in that, while it's very real, you're seeing that play out through the access that normally in the past would you would have to script, you know, or you just wouldn't be able to get to that level of detail or that level of intimacy with a film crew because it wouldn't be allowed. But the directors built a lot of trust with Larry and his team, and that enabled you as a viewer to just go into these spaces that I think ideally, or not ideally, but in other situations would take a sort of scripted reenactment approach to be able to convey the emotion of what truly happens behind some of these doors.
Mm-hmm. Early this summer, Philly DA won a Peabody Award, which would be your service's first Peabody Award. And also, since both the initial run of the program on PBS and on your service and the Peabody Award, there has been some criticism about the fact, not about the way the program was done, but about the subject. There are many people, I guess, around the country who think that this DA is one of the worst in the country. They figure that his policies have made Philadelphia more of a crime capital than it was before he took office because of cashless bail and other policies. And there are people who think, why should this guy get national publicity when he has done so badly in his role? I'm curious if there has been any kind of negative feedback for your service about that, especially in light of the Peabody win.
No, not specifically. I mean, I think the series. I would encourage anyone who has criticism to watch the series first. I think I can't really defend or not defend Larry in any particular way, but I do admire the data-led approach he takes to being in office. And while that's maybe not always the best hit with the community and conveyed in the right way, I think there's a lot of interesting experiments that he is trying that, you know, haven't been tried in a city like Philadelphia. But along with that comes a fair share of criticism, which I think is warranted. And, you know, I know we haven't been able to follow him in his second term, unfortunately, but I think it's just really interesting to continue to monitor the change long term and be able to look at it kind of from a more objective data-led approach and see what's happening. But certainly he's a controversial figure. He is interesting in that he doesn't necessarily care all the time what his critics think, and that certainly creates a lot of conversation.
And we should point out that he is not the only DA that is getting this kind of controversy. Here in New York, Alvin Bragg, George Moscone in Los Angeles, the San Francisco DA was just been ousted, Kim Fox in Chicago, and other DAs around the country, particularly in major cities, all have gotten, for various policies, the kind of criticism that Krasner has gotten. So we'll make sure that is that's very, very good. And by the way, what was it like, you know, when the Peabody people told you, hey, here's your first Peabody, you know, because for many people, the Peabody is the Pulitzer Prize of television. And for many people in the industry, this is your high point. When it comes to awards, the Peabody is it, because you're not up against any picker, you know, you're not in the same kind of thing like the Emmy Awards where you're in various categories. And the other thing is that you're up against like more than 1,000 other shows of all different shapes and sizes, not just TV, radio, podcasts, online, et cetera. So to have that honor is pretty big.
Yeah, I think we were ecstatic, basically. We knew we had something special with the series when we first met with the filmmaking team and we saw some of what they had captured. But, you know, you never really know, right, until it kind of makes its way through the machine. But, you know, we counted on that specialness. We counted on the unique approach that this filmmaking team took, their integrity, the way in which they captured a very, you know, difficult story, as you just pointed out with the criticism. And I think the fact that the Peabody Committee recognized that just, you know, really felt great to us and to the PBS ITVS team and to the filmmakers. So it was truly special and, you know, something that I think will be difficult to repeat again as much as we would like to. But it definitely was an honor.
Is there any possibility that the Philly DA makers will team up with you or you and PBS on another series?
We definitely hope so. We're, you know, always kind of talking about how things could be taken further, either with unscripted or scripted versions of series that we've been involved in. So I think cross your fingers for me. I hope that we'll, you know, be able to bring more of the Philly DA world out in the future.
Post Jim Sheridan miniseries later this week, what near term, let's say in the next couple of months, are you high on in terms of one of your attractions?
Oh, yeah. I think at the end of September, we have a pretty special Swedish series called The Dark Heart coming out. This actually premiered at the Sundance Festival this past year in the episodic section. And it's a scripted true crime. It's an actual event that happened involving a father who disappears and the daughter and her partner and their implications, and a private investigator coming in to help figure out and unpack the case. It's just stunningly well done, visually incredible, and I think truly like Nordic noir special. So we think that's going to be another really strong follow-up, especially coming out of Murder at the Cottage and a couple other series we have in between. But we're really excited for that one, and we're really thankful that Topic is able to premiere it. It's pretty fascinating.
If you have a question or comment for our second-hour guest, Ryan Shinachu, the general manager of the mega content service Topic that's available through smart TV sets, smart devices, multi-channel bundles, well, make that call, 646-652-2906, or use our chat room, SimonApple04 by name, Rick Webb, our great friend from Philadelphia, who makes many a call, by the way, over the course of our 15 years. He is already in the room. So join him. More the merrier. Coming up in our second half hour with Ryan, we'll talk about the role that U.S. Productions will have in Topic going forward, and there are some very interesting projects that are going on that will either be for Topic or for other projects from Topic's parent company. And we'll get Ryan's thoughts about the future state of the multi-content or mega-content universe with all the players from Netflix to Hulu to Topic to Disney+, HBO Max, Peacock, etc. That's all coming up. And I also have some 15th anniversary thoughts, particularly what has happened just in the last year 15 alone. That's all coming up in our next half hour. Remember, this is the first of three episodes we're doing this week on Smart Be Televised, kicking off year 16. Coming your way on Wednesday, special hour for you at 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific. My lead guest will be the founder of a mega content service that's been operating under the radar screen for some time. It's trying to be the Netflix or Topic featuring Native American content creators and productions. It's called Red Nation. You'll meet the founder, Janelle Romero. And from the new Roku attraction, TV, V is for Vino, we'll have the host and executive producer, Vincent Antor. And then Friday on Tomorrow Be Televised, I have a great lead guest for you. He's one of the contenders for the Primetime Emmy Award for Best Guest Actor in a Comedy for his work as a casino owner on the popular HBO Max series Hacks, starring Emmy winner Gene Smart. I'm talking about actor Christopher McDonald. If you don't know the name, you certainly know the face, because he has been all over the tube and all over movies in his career. And he's had a habit sometimes of playing TV personalities, real and fictional. Everyone from Ward Cleaver in the Leave It to Beaver movie to game show host and producer Jack Barry in the Robert Redford film Quiz Show, and more recently, Mel Allen, the voice of the Yankees in the acclaimed HBO movie about Roger Maris breaking Babe Ruth's record as a Yankee. That's 61. And he was also on a memorable episode of Law & Order Special Victims Unit. And in addition to Hacks, he is coming aboard in a brand new Disney Plus Marvel miniseries, Secret Invasion, coming up either late this year or early 2023. A lot to cross with Christopher McDonald about, and we'll have him for you on the first half of Friday's episode. And then we'll get into a new venture that is working with a TV festival and other people to get new TV series off the ground. It's called Entertainment and involving NFTs, Web3, maybe the metaverse, and a few other things too. You meet the chief executive officer of this very unique venture, Genevieve Spears. And it's all coming your way this Wednesday and Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, both days, right here on Tomorrow Be Televised. More with Ryan Shinachu coming up after we pause at the bottom of the hour for web identification. This is www.blogtalkradio.com, speaker.com, and tune.com, the best internet radio all over the map, and reaching over 70 million listeners around the world every month and growing. Remember, coming your way Saturday and Sunday, start your sports weekend off with Post Time with the Greek. News and commentary about what's happening in the wide, wide, and wider world of sports. That's 11:30 a.m. Eastern, 8:30 Pacific, both Saturday and Sunday, Post Time with the Greek, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And remember, best be 24/7 at YouTube.com. Welcome back to our final half hour of Tomorrow Be Televised Live 15th Anniversary Special, coming your way direct from Nueva York. Time out with you live from the Big Apple. It's 73 degrees and cloudy at the bottom of the hour here in the Big Apple. And once again, we're rejoined by Ryan Chinatry, the General Manager of Mega Content Service Topic from First Look Studios. Ryan, in addition to all the programming around the world, there's quite a few U.S. productions that are also going to be getting a shot at your network, including one that's been around for two seasons, about to enter its third and last.
Yeah, The Accent and the Wolf. We're very excited for that. Coming up here in November, it will be the conclusion of season three, and this special series from Ariane Moyet, who I hope everyone knows from Succession and Inventing Anna and the Marvel universe you were just speaking of, Simon. So this is a great chance to come into the series, pick up from the first two seasons and see how our heroine, Kelly O'Hara, who is just amazing in the series, comes in and finishes up the case she's been investigating. So we're really excited to have this as a topic original in the last couple of years. We're really thrilled to see its conclusion come to bear this fall.
And that's another thing about your service, that you're able to pick up shows from anywhere. Philly VA from PBS, particularly their Independent Lens series. This one was a web series the first season, then it became a topic series. And when it did, a year or so ago, we had the executive producer on. Kelly O'Hara, as you mentioned, very popular Broadway star. She shows a whole different side, a musical star. She has a whole different side of herself on this. It definitely was, from what I understand, a lot of fun making the series.
Yeah, they've been an incredible team to create it in the way that they have. We shot the third season over last summer. It was really fun to be able to bring the final chapters of the story together. It's quite an ambitious storyline and ambitious production, but just very well done set of circumstances. And I mean, there's I think 50. Or some more than that, Tony awards and nominations among the cast. It's really incredible the level of talent that is in this. The theater community has rallied behind the show, and you get to see so many faces throughout the course of, especially this season, but the entire series that kind of pop in and out that you'll recognize from TV. And certainly, if you're a fan of Broadway, this is a series for you to experience.
Over the last year, Topic Studios, which is the studio production unit of Topic and First Look, has announced a number of different projects. One is called The Park. Then there is a dramedy with Martin Lawrence of Martin fame and Def Comedy Jam and quite a few other things. There's also a dramatization of a very famous documentary special about Vincent Chin that was done a number of decades ago. And I believe more recently there was another original production that would be produced here involving Asian Americans. Min Tao, I think, is part of the title of it. Talk about these projects, and will they be coming to Topic, or if not, where will they be going?
Yeah, these are with my colleagues, as you mentioned, on the Topic Studio side, so I don't have too many details to share. I know everything's, you know, still in the works, and they're really excited about them. You know, most of the time, these won't be coming to Topic. We're certainly always looking for opportunities together to bring something onto the service. We did that with a series called Mihama, which is the Martin Lawrence project you're talking about. So the original version of that project is an Israeli dramedy series that is on Topic, is available on Topic, and our studio colleagues are then reimagining that for an English language version in the U.S. That's a great example of the way we like to work right now. It's a little bit tricky to have things come onto Topic at this stage, but we certainly hope as we grow that opportunity will grow as well. But we're really excited for those projects, and you know, we hope to watch them when they premiere.
And when they do premiere, we would love to have the creators on the program. And if Martin Lawrence wants to come on this show, I'd love it. We'll do half hour at least, maybe an hour on the show with him and the executive producer or creator. Anyway, since this move to true crime, have you gotten proposals from series creators or series or major creators about people who want to do true crime scripted shows? And are there any possibilities you see down the road?
Yeah, definitely. I think what comes, one benefit that comes from focus is it makes it easier for people to pitch you because, you know, they have a very clear sense of what you're looking for. So that's been really helpful both in the U.S., but also across Europe and especially in the U.K., getting more a regular stream of people who both are, you know, creators that have been following a particular case, who've been making something come together over time, as well as from, you know, typical or more traditional production companies. So nothing to announce specifically yet, but we certainly have gotten some really, I think, fascinating pitches, and we're excited to kind of continue the thread after Murder at the Cottage of bringing series that kind of look and feel like that, that have that type of pedigree. So, and we certainly welcome additional pitches and ideas. So we're always eager to hear those.
Mm-hmm. Well, now that we are seeing more and more in-person events with the pandemic hopefully winding down and becoming an endemic, where we can have people not social distance and wear masks and so on and so forth. Is Topic looking to go to places like Series Fest in Denver or some of the other TV festivals or Catalyst, which is coming up in Duluth, Minnesota next month that we'll be talking about later this week when we talk about entertainment, which is working with them, or some of the film festivals like Bentonville and others that are now more and more showing TV series pilots to maybe get ideas of either concepts to work with or people to work with?
Yeah, we're always on the lookout. I think most of our time is concentrated on some of the international marketplaces and festivals, but things like Series Mania in France, Content London, and, you know, MIPCOM. So that's kind of our priority. But we certainly look for any opportunity, especially where there's a meeting of a lot of creators from around the world. So one of our big priorities moving forward is to have a greater representation on the service from South America, Asia, Africa, the Middle East especially. So a lot of what we're looking for in in-person events is the opportunity to meet with production companies, filmmakers, distributors that are on the kind of cutting edge of what's coming out of those markets. So that's really our priority for the next year or two.
Mm-hmm. Since you mentioned going back to international, are you looking at Spanish language?
Certainly, yeah. We're totally open to that. I think we're trying to find kind of that, you know, what is the next gritty crime drama? You know, Narcos is often, you know, frequent comp. We haven't seen something that works quite yet for Topic, but we definitely are always on the lookout. We'd love to have some Spanish language here.
Mm-hmm. Two arenas I wanted to get to before we go into where you see the future of television, especially the future of mega content services like Topic. One is, have you thought about doing an anthology show that's devoted to true crime or crime?
We've explored. We picked up a scripted anthology from Korea called SF8. That's our first experiment. That's not exactly crime, but it's sort of societal Black Mirror type crime. So that's been really fun and exciting. And we're definitely not opposed to anthology. We have a series called Catching a Killer, which is a little bit like that. It's an unscripted series that looks at a particular police station in the UK and how they investigate different cases. So that's been really going strongly for us. We released that a couple months ago or last month. So we think that's an interesting format, especially in true crime. Maybe not as much in scripted, but I think in the unscripted space, it's really interesting to explore.
Mm-hmm. The other thing is, and we mentioned this with Amy toward the end of our interview last hour with her, is that you now have podcasts that are actively trying to become television series. In fact, last week I saw a press release that there is a major company that just does scripted podcasts that is now working already to get three of their current podcasts to become scripted television series and actually working with showrunners, TV showrunners, to make that happen. Is that something you're looking at, either podcasts or webtoons or as you did with Kelly O'Hara's series, other web series to see if they might be adaptable?
Yeah, I think it's a really interesting space. We haven't done anything specifically there, but we have been keeping our eye out for properties that might make sense. We actually were at CrimeCon this past April, which is a really great event in Vegas that brings together a lot of true crime podcasts and that community. So that was kind of our first foray to see what the audience was like and what types of stories were resonating there. So we learned a lot from sponsoring that event. We had our series Missing Children there. And I think there's a lot of interesting, a lot of interesting work happening in the audio space and audio movies and also, of course, in podcasts. So we hope to be able to explore that more next year and to bring a podcast, maybe into topic and also have then, some type of adaptation in the future, which would be cool.
Yeah. Sort of segueing into our final area of conversations, where do you see the future of mega content services focus? When it comes to topic, how do you see, particularly with this focus on true crime, the service evolving when it comes to ritual production? For example, do you see the ability to mix genres, mix true crime with a dystopian future kind of series, to mix true crime with comedy or satire or political satire, mix true crime with science fiction or rom-coms or other kinds of genre television?
Oh, yeah, that would be fun. I think, as we grow, we hope to be able to do more original productions in that type of style. We have a really fun comedy crime series called Year of the Rabbit. I don't remember if we talked about it before, but it has Matt Berry in it. It does really well on the service. It's a Victorian period piece, but it's a comedy about a police station and sort of all of the crazy crimes that happen in Victorian England. It's a really creative, fun concept that I think could only come from kind of the original programming lens. So those are the types of experiments we would love to be able to do more of, I think, this genre bending, but also bringing you series, as I mentioned, from other countries and being able to find mythology, lore, things that scare people in other societies, like be able to build shows around that and expose an American audience to something that, they just weren't aware of. So I think it's definitely on the in the cards for us as we grow, and I think we're really we love a straight kind of crime investigation, but we obviously think there's lots of ways to play with that and to kind of do things differently and bring our audience series that are being innovative in how they tell some of these cases.
And if you want a benchmark, you can look, for example, at Only Murders in the Building, which is, of course, Hulu's hit series that is back up for more Emmy Awards. It's a comedy, but it also has a mystery and a crime, at the core.
Yeah.
Netflix, of the mega content services, is the only one that is doing interactive programming on a regular, semi-regular basis, whether it was more recently Trivia Quest, which was their daily animated interactive trivia game show, to, of course, Bandersnatch, the Black Mirror episode that won the Emmy Award for made-for-TV movie. And I know there's a lot of people who ask, did it qualify for that because it's an episode of a television series or what? But that's another story. Is interactivity in some way in Topic's future?
Ooh, probably not anytime soon. I think, Netflix has a lot of very smart people and a lot of, a lot of money working on that to do it as seamlessly as they have. And that's a big challenge. Gaming, interactivity, I think it's really fascinating, and I'm excited to see how they continue to merge those worlds together in their interface. I think we're a little bit away from that, but maybe as the technology makes it easier for a service like ours, I certainly wouldn't say no to us experimenting with it. I just don't think we have the tech to be able to pull it off anytime soon.
So let's broaden things in terms of the future of mega content services. It seems right now that we have three generations of these mega content services. First generation, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon, Crackle, your service. Second generation, the plus services, Apple TV Plus, HBO Max, Peacock, Disney Plus, et cetera, et cetera. Third generation, which we're now starting to discover, are these services that are going after specific audiences, particularly audiences of color, BET Plus, Red Nation, which we're going to cover on Wednesday's show, Black Oak TV, which we had last week on our program, VIX Plus, formerly Prende TV from Televisa Univision, and maybe through Peacock T Plus that Peacock is going to do with Telemundo. There's talk about maybe having a gaming-oriented that includes scripted television service called Binge. There's the service TMTG Plus that Donald Trump, former President Donald Trump, is doing with Scott St. John, the executive producer of the former executive Deal No Deal, with Devin Nunes, the former congressman. How do you see this mega content environment evolving, let's say, over the rest of this decade?
Oh, big question. I mean, I think you're going to continue to see this sort of fracturing that's happening. I think all of those services are great. It's been, you know, it's been hard if you really are part of a specific community or love a very specific genre in the past necessarily, like, to have all of that at your fingertips. And now it's possible, right? It's like you can find your community and you can find that type of programming. You know, a complaint we get a lot in our advertising is, oh, not another streaming service. I think audiences are fatigued right now with all of the ways that they have to go out into the market to find the shows that they're interested in. So I do think that that problem, you know, will need to be solved in some ways, in continued consolidation perhaps, or in the ways that some of these streaming marketplaces have popped up to make it easier for consumers to sample across different services. So I think, you know, you're going to kind of see a contraction at some point, maybe a couple of years from now, after we've gone through this very typical expansion cycle. I think AVOD Fast is obviously a big critical part of this, and I think you're going to see those worlds work more seamlessly together. Amazon is, to me, probably going to be one of the, you know, leaders here if they get their interfaces right with Freevee. I mean, there's some amazing programming on Freevee and, like, how that interacts with your Amazon Prime subscription and your Amazon Channel subscription. And I think that is a really interesting, like, mini ecosystem to watch to see how they evolve that and what consumers are really interested in a kind of free-to-pay environment that ideally gives them, you know, hopefully more choice and access to more programming, but not in a way that's overwhelming. And then I think you hit on something with interactivity and gaming. So I am really interested. There's a lot of gaming adaptations coming out right now in the scripted space. A couple really big titles like the, you know, being released now and into the future, Resident Evil with Netflix's, you know, latest example. And I'm curious how the kind of scripted versions may interact with something that is more interactive, that is more aimed at the gaming community. I think you mentioned in one of your promos you're going to be talking more about NFTs and Web3. You know, I think that's another area in streaming that's just going to be really interesting and is a very TBD about how it's going to all work. But I'm excited for those opportunities. For maybe the audience to play a bigger role in choice, whether that's through what gets made. I'm always interested in things that break down the gates and let those communities, especially communities of color, be able to play a stronger role in what gets shown on screen. And I think that there's a democratization of that I hope that kind of the decentralization in Web3 might be able to push through in an interesting way over the next couple of years. So lots of opportunity.
Ryan, we have a call. We're going to take it. Hello, you're on Tomorrow Be Televised. What's your name and where are you calling from?
Hey, Simon. It's Rick Webb calling from Philadelphia.
Rick, welcome, and thank you for all the contributions you've made with your phone calls to our series over the years. It's deeply appreciated.
Oh, absolutely. That's why I'm calling just real quick, just to congratulate you on your 15th anniversary. Thank you for everything that you're doing. You know, I've learned so much from your show over the years, all your great interviews. So often they're so in-depth and, you know, different than other people's interviews that really get in there. And so I've learned so much about the television business as well as, you know, just everything, even from the music that goes on to the writing. So it's just really been brilliant, and just wanted to say thank you and congratulations.
Thank you very much, Rick. It's a pleasure to have you aboard. Your questions are always on the money, and I know our guests always appreciate it, and yours truly as well. And it's always on the money. And if you have a question for Ryan, go ahead.
Well, I don't, but I do have a question for you. I just wanted to know, like, how are you celebrating your 15th anniversary tonight? Are you getting a grandmother pizza from Smiling, or what are you doing?
Well, I'm going to celebrate later this week. Some people know that I'm a ballroom dance buff, and we have Lincoln Center going on with a fantastic Bring Back Midsummer Night Swing as Summer for the City, and their final two events of the season, which has been over the last 3 months, are happening this Thursday and Friday. Mambo on Thursday night with the Spanish Harlem Orchestra, and Friday with one of the great musical treasures of this city, the Harlem Renaissance Orchestra, and then we'll be celebrating that way. And if you're in the New York area and you're a ballroom dancer or dance fan, come on down. It's free. You don't need to show a vax card. You don't need to show a negative coronavirus test. Just come on down, get in, and have fun, and be with people that you know or don't know, and have a great time with wonderful live music.
Awesome. Sounds like a lot of fun. So hope you enjoy it, and congratulations again, and thanks for everything, Simon.
You're very welcome, Rick, and everything willing, we're going to keep doing this through the rest of this decade and maybe even beyond.
Cool. Looking forward to it. Well, thanks again.
Same here, Rick. Take care. All the greatest.
You too. Goodbye.
Rick Webb, our very good friend from Philadelphia, here on Tomorrow Be Televised. And I said a great contributor to this program over the years. Ryan, Warner Bros. Discovery is going to release their quarterly report. And there was a story in the Hollywood Reporter this morning suggesting that they are going to merge HBO Max and Discovery Plus. HBO Max mostly scripted. Some unscripted, Discovery Plus pretty much mostly unscripted, except for some of the programming on the Oprah Winfrey Network. If they do merge, do you think there could be room for another unscripted mega content service to take its place?
I think it's pretty crowded. I think you've got some great options with what that new service will be with Netflix, with places like CuriosityStream, which I think does a really good job in some of that alternative unscripted space. You know, I think Discovery is just such a master at it. I suppose if the merger doesn't go well, it will open the door, right? If people get upset about Discovery or there's been some interesting programming choices made, right? The decline of kids and family. So who knows, once they start getting the data in, maybe they decide they're going to cut back on certain reality areas, which people love. And I think that opens it much more strongly for Peacock. I think Peacock is finding its way, but, you know, they're probably best positioned to carry on that mantle if Discovery falters. So I'm really curious how that combined interface will work and how they'll continue the kind of Discovery curation quality that obviously HBO has really nailed the last couple of years.
Topic, the Mega Content Service and First Look Studios is available on smart TV sets, smart TV devices, and multi-channel bundles as well. For more details about the service online, here's where you go, www.topic.com. www.topic.com. Ryan Chinatry, the general manager of Topic, thank you very, very much again for being on the program and being part of our 15th anniversary special. It was great to have you. Love the conversation. Let's do this again soon. And with more, and by the way, as more of your U.S. productions and perhaps some overseas too come to light, we'd love to have them on this program. Open invitation.
That's great. And thank you, Simon. And I really appreciate you inviting me to share this special week. Congrats again. And I look forward to our next conversation.
Absolutely, Ryan. You're very, very welcome. Take care. Have a sensational week.
You too. Thanks. Bye.
Ryan Chinatry, the general manager of Topic, joining us live from here in Brooklyn in Nueva York. 5 years ago, on the first Monday of August 2017, when we marked our 10th anniversary, I made a declaration off the bat that television was entering several eras, an era of plentiful TV, not peak TV, plentiful TV on a lot of levels, diverse TV, smart TV. And over the last 5 years, it has happened, and especially this last 12 months. And when we were on the first Monday of August last year, who would have thought that a year later, that smart TV sets and smart TV devices would not only be running channels with their expanded capacity and capabilities, but actually creating new channels and new content, whether Samsung, LG, Roku, Vizio, etc. Who would have thought that we would be big into the era of interactive television with interactive healthcare services like Independa, interactive fitness channels from the likes of Apple Fitness Plus, Peloton, and Beachbody, more interactive programming like Trivia Quest on Netflix, interactive advertising on various channels, and even now, the opportunity of shoppable television or commerce ads where you can order products and services without using a smartphone, without using a tablet, without using your laptop or PC, without using a Q code, just you and your voice or you and your voice remote and make the ad happen and work for you. And also that we are now in the era of interactive game hubs from Samsung and soon LG and other places, maybe even Xbox getting into the smart TV product world, where you can play games with your voice remote, or a special wireless controller playing right at the screen and not have to use an Xbox or a PlayStation or a similar console. That mega content services like Topic and Netflix and so forth would get more and more programming, that we would see new services of mega content variety that are aimed at communities of color, like Black Oak Television we showcased last week, and what we'll showcase on Wednesday, Red Nation Television, or VIX Plus from Televisa Univision. And, of course, more and more opportunities to create television through video versions of podcasts, video adaptations of webtoons, NFTs, cryptocurrency, Web3, maybe the metaverse, and fund it to get new TV series off the ground. It really has been an extraordinary last 12 months. And goodness knows where the roller coaster goes from here. But I give you this promise. As long as we can, everything willing, we will cover it right here on Tomorrow Will Be Televised. Don't forget, coming your way Wednesday and Friday. On Wednesday, our guests will be from Red Nation TV Network, the founder Janelle Romero, and from the new Roku attraction, Dia Sorvino, host executive producer Vincent Antor. And chief executive officer on Friday, Entertainment, we'll have Genevieve Sears. But first, our special Primetime Emmy Award nominee guest, he's our lead guest, Christopher McDonald. That's on Friday's episode. If you came in late on today's program, want to catch up on episodes you missed, go to our homepage, blogtalkradio.com/televised. That's blogtalkradio.com/televised. And check out our podcast anytime, available on the iRadio Podcast Network, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Vizio Smart TV Sets, and other places too. Love to hear from you. What did you think about our 50th anniversary episode today? And thank you very much to Amy Winter and Ryan Chester for being with us and all of you for tuning in. Love to hear from you. Email me, simonapple04@yahoo.com. That's where I get involved with our classic trivia question as well. Or you can find me on social media, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. However you respond to me, I respond back to you within 24 hours. That's our promise to you. Why? Because what you say matters absolutely now more than ever. The views expressed here are those of the participants. They are not say those of Blog Talk Radio and other services of this program. Andy Toews, BeachR's General Manager, Jay Sonnenberg, Head of Content. Website service provided by On Podium, the Internet's new podcast outpost. Guitarist Vegas is our web coordinator. And our outpost, Tomorrow Be Televised on OnPodium.com. But Tomorrow Be Televised, I'm Simon Applebaum in New York. Thank you for your listening now and throughout these 15 years. God willing, everything willing, a whole lot more. We'll be back on Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern, New Pacific, you know where, Blog Talk Radio, Spreaker, Twitter Radio, and all of our podcast affiliates. We're up to you now and then. Please make it safe and make it great. If you haven't been vaccinated, check in with your doctor. Find out your medical situation. Learn about all the treatments, including the Pfizer and Merck pills, that are available to you right now that can make a difference to you right now. And then make a choice, your choice. Happy 50th anniversary, everyone. Until the next time, stay well and stay tuned.